There are nearly 7 children dying from gun deaths every single day of the week in this country. And there are just so many ways in which the voices of just sensible, moderate people who want to make a difference and kind of end this madness are just not being heard somehow in a very crazy political climate. And I think coming together of different faith traditions, and there'll be Jews and Christians and Muslims and Sufis there, all just committed to a message of nonviolence, to a message of human dignity, and just emphasizing the fact that this madness on our streets just can't go on. Well over 30,000 gun deaths a year. Like, how can we continue to live with that and think that's okay? And so I think we're coming together with a unified voice saying, doesn't matter what our faith tradition says that's different to what the other faith tradition says, when it comes to issues of human life, we have to be a unified voice.
Well, Reverend Alan Johnson, you're the national chair of the Mental Health Network of the United Church of Christ. You're going to be one of the panelists on Sunday. We talk a lot about mental health in the context of gun violence when we see mass shootings. However, Rabbi Soloway has already mentioned the fact that there are thousands and thousands of people dying by guns that are nothing to do with mental health, that are nothing to do with the mass shootings that we're seeing.
And that's absolutely true.
So talk about your perspective.
Yeah,
now.
Well, one of the things that I'm going to begin to talk about on Sunday is that I get very defensive when I see in one sentence the words mental health and gun violence. Because really, if we really analyze what's going on, even though the public believes that there are 60% of the people think that people have schizophrenia are causing these gun deaths, is absolutely in error. That is a myth that needs to be debunked. If we really look at the situation of persons who are living with mental health issues and concerns, about 4% of those that have any kind of violent behavior is only 4%. And if you remove such conditions as disadvantaged communities in terms of drug and alcohol abuse, it's down to about 2%. So we really have to understand that indeed we have to kind of challenge the stigma that people are carrying, especially by the public, which is vilifying people that are living with mental health issues, because at least 14 times more people that have schizophrenia are the victims of violence, not those who perpetrate it.
So how do we change that paradigm that when there is a mass shooting, mental health is invariably brought up as a way to address gun violence? And there's often a complete vacuum of the context of the fact that there are so many more people being killed every day by guns that have nothing to do with mental health.
Well, actually, there is an overlap, and that is the largest. We know that suicides are really the leading cause of gun deaths in America, suicides. And in those persons who are actually ending their life, at least 87 to 90% of those persons do have some kind of a mental health disorder themselves. So the violence is toward oneself. It's not toward others. So how do we address that? I think there are things we can do. I think there are things that are happening here in the Boulder County to address at least the understanding, the awareness of what mental health challenges are, and the fraying and the broken system of mental health here in our county.
Well, one of the speakers on Sunday is Jared Heineman, who has
Correct.
Been a guest on KGNU. He's with the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, very much spearheading their suicide prevention
Exactly.
efforts there
Exactly.
as well. But getting back to the multi-faith aspect of what's happening on Sunday, Rabbi Soloway, do you think that churches, regardless of the denomination, regardless of the religion, that church leaders in this country have played any kind of a role in being out there front and center, not just in their congregation, but in politics, because we do know that many churches have a very strong political voice. Do you think that they have played a strong enough role in either advocating for gun control or really just speaking out about this issue of gun violence?
I fear not enough. I mean, in the case of advocating against gun violence, I don't think those voices have been strong enough. I think there are groups within the denominations, like there's a very, very strong group of rabbis against gun violence that has formed nationally, that is beginning to partner with other national organizations and is really speaking out. I think that the level of political discourse has become so difficult, especially in an election year in this country, that I think a lot of people are afraid to speak from their pulpits passionately about this issue because it becomes divisive. It becomes partisan in a way that it shouldn't be partisan. We're talking about we're talking about the sanctity of human life, which is a value that every religion embraces, like sanctity of human life. I feel that is so important, and so I do want to say something about suicide, because in Colorado, 82% of gun deaths are actually as a result of suicide, and I think we as a faith community have to take that extremely seriously. And the kind of myth that the gun lobby has created, that people are safer if there are guns in their homes, is such a strong myth, because someone who is at risk, if there is a gun available to them, they are so much more likely to take their own lives. Actually, 85% of suicide attempts with a gun are successful, whereas most other forms of suicide are not in the same way. And so just having guns around in environments where people have access to them and where they may be at risk is just something that we have to take seriously as a community, and that has to be across the faith traditions.
Well, Alan Johnson, what are your thoughts on that, on how churches and faith leaders have either have or have not participated enough in a national dialogue around this?
Again, I don't sense that faith communities are really, as the rabbi said, taking enough initiative in terms of like legislative actions as well. I mean, there's a lot of bills that are right in front of Congress right now. The Murphy bill, deeds, a bunch of people have really kind of pulled these laws together. And I don't think that many faith communities are really getting involved in legislative matters, which is unfortunate. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, one of the best grassroots organizations nationally around addressing mental health issues, they deal with education, advocacy, and support. Those are the three legs that they kind of address. And I think that faith communities could also take a real benefit from that guideline, that vision. I think that faith communities can, if anything, they can reduce fear. And fear is what feeds some of the phobia and the hysteria that people perpetrate actually in this country. And it really is a paralyzing impact in people's lives. So I think not only reducing fear, but also continuing to expand compassion. And compassion really is how faith communities are one way that indeed we can actually embody what it means to live into a world where there is nonviolence, where there is embracing other people and welcoming great differences and diversity of people.
Well, you might argue that some faith communities have a very strong political voice and have made their perspectives on certain issues very well known, particularly as they're framed as pro-life. And yet those faith communities, who I'm sure listeners are aware of, don't necessarily talk about gun violence when they're talking about their pro-life agenda. It's very much directed towards one specific target, normally reproductive rights.
Well, that is very true.
So how do, say, progressive faith communities, and I don't want to label groups as progressive faith communities, but how do those other faith communities elevate their voices to that same amplitude?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I'm part of it, obviously, a progressive Christian denomination, the United Church of Christ, and we obviously would go toe-to-toe with some of the things that you're mentioning right now in terms of other faith communities and how they've articulated their way to do it, because I think they haven't been looked at the whole perspective. Again, if we're talking about persons that are dealing with gun violence issues, and you want to have the laws and you want to discriminate and you want to put people on a national database because they have a mental health challenge, for instance, that is so discriminatory, and they try to propose that, but it really doesn't include the variety of concerns that people live with. Let's really provide the financial support that's needed in terms of mental health systems that have been broken. Obviously, that's very important.
we've talked about some of the issues that I'm sure will be discussed on Sunday, but what are some of the strategies and solutions that you're hoping will emerge from this, Alan Johnson?
Well, obviously, one of the things that I'm very committed to as clergy myself is that faith communities can actually do a whole lot more. I talk about education. That is so important in terms of having the awareness that indeed one out of four people in the population are living with some kind of mental health condition. So this is all of us. This is not something that is exclusive of who we are. So I think number one is, again, education, awareness. I mean, in worship services, is it true that faith leaders are able to even articulate some of these concerns and issues that people are living with? I think that it makes a huge difference. Our use of language. You read about the people that are the mentally ill. Now, these are people who have a mental illness. Person first. Even that way to understand by using language how we understand how people are, it can make a difference as well. I think also in having support groups in that faith communities can offer, so that people that are kind of struggling with some of the issues, and again, I'm coming out of this more out of the connection around mental health issues and as well. But that is where there can be that embracing, welcoming experience that people really, really need. In the paper yesterday, we know that Sue Klebold, her book just came out, and she said that she missed the warning signs of her son's depression and the suicidal urges that accompanied it because she didn't know how to look for them. Can't faith communities at least provide some ways that people can understand this and provide education so that indeed we can see some of the signs and what's going on? There's the mental health first aid program right here locally. It's a national program. It can also provide that faith communities actually can encourage that, can even sponsor those organizations getting together to talk about these things. So again, I think education is very, very important.
Well, Rabbi Mark Soloway, what do you hope will emerge from Sunday's gathering?
I mean, first, I really feel moved by that response. I think it's so important that we take that very seriously and do more education around mental health. But I would add to that, that I think there are ways in which we can really get involved on a political level. I mean, there are multiple attempts to bring sensible gun legislation, and we're not talking. I think people get so paranoid and confused that we're trying to so-called take away people's Second Amendment rights. No one in this movement is suggesting that we, you know, criminalize guns. We're trying to create a system where the guns that we already have are safe. That, you know, like why isn't there technology about smart technology for guns? You know, we have every single, as President Obama said, like every single thing in our society in the time that he's grown from childhood to be president of this country has been about increasing safety and increasing awareness. And somehow the gun industry, even though we have the technology to use smart technology to make guns safer, we're not using that. Like, you know, sensible background checks, like. I just, you know, why should someone who has a history of domestic violence be able to get to buy a gun online? It just makes no sense. And I think we have to continue to enforce those laws and work towards those laws. And then there's also, in the same way that we're talking about mental health, I mean, just awareness, just basic awareness. And there's a group that grew out initially out of Together Colorado called Guns to Art, which has been doing all kinds of education in schools, just showing people the dangers of guns and how to have basic gun safety. If you are in an environment where there are guns, just how to protect yourself, how to keep families safe, and so on. So there's an awareness of the impact of what guns do in our world. There's the awareness that that actually some people live with this fantasy that if they have guns in their house, they're much safer from intruders. But actually, for every intruder that is stopped through a gun, there's something like four times, you know, more likely that there's going to be an inappropriate use of that gun. You know, guns lethalize anger. If someone's like having a fit of anger, they may not have a mental health issue, but they may be in a fit of rage. And if there's a gun in the house, they are much more likely to use it. And inflict a wound or a fatality on someone through the gun. So I think all of the just, I think, so on one level, the faith community are obligated to raise awareness of safety, raise awareness of mental health, raise awareness of the political issues on the table. And where possible, I think we have an obligation also to help lobby our our legislature and really kind of work towards a society that really has a much safer and healthier relationship to guns.